Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. Coming up on the programme tonight, Not Fit for Purpose, The Leaving Cert and The Points Race.
They haven't a clue. It's absolutely ridiculous that it takes 3 to 4 years of an academic year of a person's life to get a basic degree.
Changing the Leaving Cert and should third level prepare students for life or for industry? It's our late debate tonight after the news, which is read now by Eileen Whelan.
Good evening. The talks aimed at finding a resolution to the Aer Lingus cabin crew dispute have been adjourned and will resume in the morning. The row over rosters grounded the airline's operations last Friday. Management sources said there had been a certain amount of engagement today and that the airline remained positive about achieving a solution. However, Michael Landers of the Impact Trade Union said efforts to have travel privileges restored to those who took part in last week's 24-hour strike have so far failed.
I think if they were, and if they genuinely wished to make progress, then that would have been a no-brainer to have lifted the suspension of flight privileges. The fact that they haven't done that is one of the reasons that leads me to believe that perhaps they're not serious. But again, tomorrow will test the sincerity and the truth of that.
The Archbishop of Tuam, Michael Neary, has welcomed the government's decisions to establish a review of the burial arrangements for children in mother and baby homes. It comes after the remains of almost 800 children were found buried on the grounds of a former Bon Secours home for unmarried mothers in Tuam in County Galway. Archbishop Neary said the diocese did not have any involvement in the running of the home, but the material which the Bon Secours sisters held was handed over to Galway County Council and the health authorities in 1961. He said there was a clear moral imperative on the Bon Secours sisters to act upon their responsibilities. The Shannon Committee on Selection has recommended the selection of independent Senator Sean Barrett and Fianna Fáil's Mark McSharry to sit on the banking inquiry. The government nomination of Susan O'Keefe was not accepted. The chairman of the committee is expected to bring the recommendations to the full Shannon to accept, reject or amend it. In Syria, President Bashar al-Assad has won a third term in office after securing over 88% of the vote in last Tuesday's presidential election. The Syrian opposition dismissed the election result, saying it had no credibility, coming as it does in the middle of a civil war. There was one winner of tonight's lotto jackpot worth over 12 million euro. The numbers drawn were 13, 14, 24, 31, 35 and 43. The bonus number was 21. The winning ticket was sold in the northwest. The weather forecast, it'll be mainly dry tonight with clear spells and lowest temperatures of 4 to 7 degrees. Thursday will be mainly dry with good sunny spells and highest temperatures 14 to 17 degrees. And that's all from the newsroom till 11, but now back to the late debate.
Eileen, thank you very much indeed and you're very welcome back to the programme. In 1963, a Labour Party policy paper said the entire leaving certificate system was in urgent need of radical change. 51 years later, nothing has changed. The critics have been lining up, the best quote perhaps coming from the former Dean of UCD's Smurfit and Quinn Business Schools, Professor Tom Begley. He said he would love to see the Leaving Cert taken out into a field and blown up. It's completely dysfunctional, he said. So tonight, on the night that's in it, we're debating the Leaving Cert, the points race and the quality of our graduates. And joining me in studio is a woman who's been involved in almost every major report on all aspects of the Leaving Cert over the past 20 years or so. Anya Hyland is Emeritus Professor of Education and former Vice President of University College Cork. Arthur Godsell is Director of Godsell Education Consultants and former Principal of St Andrew's College in Dublin. Tony Donoghue is Head of Education and Social Policy Innovation at the Business Employers Group IBEC. And Ferdinand von Pronczynski is the Principal and Vice Chancellor of Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen, but was President of DCU for 10 years until 2010. You're all very welcome to the programme. I was just checking with you all before we started whether you were all agreed that the leaving certificate is seriously flawed. But Anya, you've some good things to say about it nonetheless.
Yes, I think the leaving certificate has stood us well as a country for a long time. Of course it has flaws and it requires change, but that doesn't mean there's nothing at all good about it. And it's a well-respected examination. It's respected nationally, it's respected internationally, and it's trusted by the third level system, by employers and by parents. So I think we have to see the positives.
But when people say it's outdated, it's crude, it's a brutal instrument, it doesn't reflect students' performances throughout the year, how do you counter that?
Yeah, that's true. The only thing we have to be aware of, though, it is a good predictor of subsequent academic performance in spite of all of that. So there has to be something good about it, either that or the whole system, second and third level, is all wrong, which nobody is suggesting. So, yes, there are a lot of good things about it. But yes, of course, in terms of the way student learning is assessed, there is room for a lot of change. And
what would you say is the best thing about it?
The best thing, I guess, that's a good question. It's reliable. It's valid as an examination system. But of course, it doesn't treat everybody fairly. And no examination system, no one examination system can do that, I think. I think that's one of the negatives about it, is that it relies so much on the terminal examination. I think that's the major weakness of the Leaving Certificate, and I think it's well established now that that is a weakness.
Arthur Godsell, you have nothing good to say about it, do you?
Well, maybe that's a slight exaggeration, I suppose, really, because Anya has put forward a case which is very fair, I suppose, for Leaving Certificate. But having been 24 years as head of St Andrews, I want to congratulate every single student tonight who have completed 14 years of formal education and are sitting down to an examination in which a 3-hour examination may determine their future. And I congratulate them for getting so far. I've seen an awful lot of students over the years, excellent students in many, many ways, not reach their potential because the Leaving Certificate doesn't pull out their strengths. It's an examination that I believe really tries in some ways to catch them out. I mean, the example of tomorrow now, I think it is on Friday, I think it is the English paper 2, or I think it's maybe tomorrow actually, the paper 2, English paper 2 for the literature paper, you know, which poet is going to come up? You know, it's a guesswork situation. So I'd be very, very very negative about the Leaving Certificate. I'm a great believer in strengths-based education, where we should concentrate on students' strengths rather than their weaknesses. The Leaving Certificate actually tries to get students to do as many subjects as they possibly can, sometimes 7, 8, in some cases 9. And the pressure is on for those students to actually achieve and across all those subjects. An interesting statistic which might help matters here. In 2012, 67% of students got 395 points or less in the Leaving Certificate, which means that 2/3 of the students were at the lower end in terms of a college entry. So yeah, it suits the top third or top 25%, but the majority of students, it doesn't do them justice.
Ferdinand, what's your view on the Leaving Certificate as it stands at the moment?
Well, I think there are two ways of looking at this. One of them is to look at it as a pedagogical instrument and to look at what people cover in the learning that they do, what they are expected as a result to know. And that's one part of it, is the curriculum syllabus end of it. The other part is what's done with it afterwards. And for many people, and I think that's not just the students who take the Leaving Cert, but their parents in particular, and sometimes their teachers and guidance counsellors, it's a very functional thing. What the Leaving Cert is there for is to get them into university. And to get them sometimes into particular disciplines, subjects in university. And so the actual learning element suddenly takes second place. So it becomes, as Arthur was just saying, there's a predictive element involved in that. You'd have to predict what's going to come up. It's a game, so you're playing it, you're trying to get an advantage in it. And pedagogy takes a back seat. And one of the consequences of that is that when students then come to university, they are... they're prepared for all the wrong things. They are not prepared for the kind of deep learning that you're supposed to do at university. They're not prepared to have to think for themselves and maybe to argue with their lecturer and maybe even argue with the material that's in front of them. And so very often these days, the first year at university is remedial teaching to get over all the faults that students have taken on as a result of the
Leaving Cert. And do many first-year students drop out because they're unable perhaps to make that change?
There is a significant number that are at risk. One of the things that I did when I was president of DCU is at one particular point of the year, which was usually just before or just after Christmas, I would write a personal letter to every single student. And the purpose of that letter was to tell them, if you are having any difficulties, if you're worried about what's going on, if you're not coping with this, and if you can't think of who else to talk to, come and talk to me. And some of them did, every year, a number of them came to do that. And one of the things that I learned from that was that this dysfunctional element of having prepared for learning in one particular way and then having been dropped into an environment which was completely different was really disorienting students. And yes, and a number of them would drop out.
Tony Donoghue, what's your view on it?
Well, I think I'd share the view of our previous speakers. I was just struck when Arthur was talking about the poet that might appear on tomorrow's paper. Remember about 4 years ago, the bookies were actually running odds on whether Evan Bolan would turn up on the Leaving Cert paper. And I thought we'd come to a fairly sorry state of affairs. So, first of all, it does have positive elements to it. It's impartial, it's fair, it's an amazing logistical exercise, and I think the State Examinations Commission deserve a degree of credit the way they run it. But it's what Ornia calls in her literature the backwash effect on teaching and learning at second level. The fact that if you have all your teaching oriented towards a terminal examination, you're missing out on the other learning outcomes that we as employers are looking for. And this is something, you know, around, there's different terms for it, sometimes called soft skills, but they're not soft, generic skills, employability skills. They're basically communications, analytical thinking, critical thinking, these types of attributes, which quite frankly, the Leaving Cert doesn't actually develop. In terms of dropouts, the dropout rate across the board is about 16% after first year. It does actually rise to much higher levels for certain subjects such as computer science and engineering, up to close to 30% in some level 7 courses. And the reason for that is maths. And it's interesting the contortions the system has gone into when it introduced curriculum reform around maths, which was a new way of looking at teaching. It was teaching for understanding.
This is Project Maths.
Yes, this is Project Maths. And we found how, you know, the problems a system that was accustomed to teaching in a particular way had in accommodating this new approach. Now, I do think we're moving in the right direction there, but it just highlights some of the issues.
Ornia, with that exception, why hasn't it been changed until now? Why has it remained largely the same for so long?
Well, there have been changes in the actual syllabus for each subject is reviewed regularly and is updated, but there hasn't been the fundamental change that is now being proposed by the NCCA and broadly accepted by the minister. And of course, there's a major change coming in the junior cycle. And the junior cycle, I've no doubt but that the change in style of learning that we hope will come about as a result of the junior cycle reform, I'm quite sure that the young people of Ireland will want that to be continued on into leaving certificates. So one, we have to have some optimism in relation to that. But education systems all over the world and all through time are very resistant to change. I mean, the education generally is one of the most conservative parts of society, and there's nothing unique to Ireland about that, so and are indeed unique to our times either. Education tends to be slow to change. I mean, for example, I'm sure those of you, I remember when biros came in first, and our teachers were terribly concerned about biros because biros would destroy our handwriting. So every time there's a new technology, education and schooling tends to be resistant and slow to adopt it.
So what's the big plan by the NCCA for the Leaving Cert?
The big plan for the Leaving Certificate, they have developed a framework, a different framework for development. And that framework will inform all the new syllabi, which will be brought in gradually over the next 10, 15 years. But education change is slow because, you know, you have to prepare the teachers, you have to prepare the environment, you have to make sure that, you know, you can't have a big bang and destroy what good there is there. So I guess that's just the way it has. That's the way it is, and there's not. I'm not saying I support it. It's not my style, but mm-hmm. that's the way it has happened over the generations.
But Arthur, 50 years plus is a long time. Yeah, is it to resist change?
Absolutely. It's. I think it's far too long, and it's aspirational. I think at this stage, I don't think it's gone any further than that. Mm. That worries me deeply. I mean, any system that is. I'm going now to the CAO system. I'm just going off that a little bit, but. Any system that works on a supply-demand system for children is a disgrace. You know, I mean, if I give you a figure again, in science in TCD in 2008, required entry points of 415. Science in 2013 in TCD, 510. So the children are asked to sit an examination after 14 years of formal education, sit an examination and hope to get into a particular course or destination that they actually don't know enough about. They don't know enough about what's required of them to actually hit that point. I always think it's like asking Usain Bolt in the 100 metres to run the race in the Olympics, and as he flashes past the finish line in 9.2 seconds or whatever it is, I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, the official says, oh, I'm sorry, Usain, you didn't win that, because while you were running the race, we changed the distance. In other words, it's as stupid as that. I can't understand why we can't have set matriculation areas for different levels, and rather than the system supporting the system, the student must be primary in this. And I believe implicitly that I've seen so many children over the years very upset not getting into a course because of the vagaries of the actual year that's in it. My doctor, I'm sure, is a very good doctor, but I'm sure he didn't get 570 points mm. when he was doing it. So I think that the system is deeply flawed. And if we're waiting for 50 years or longer, or whatever else it is to do it, it is a disgrace. But not only that, I don't know if you remember a book called Soundings, a textbook called Soundings. Soundings was there for as long as I can remember.
Yes.
It didn't change. This will tell you how slow education changes. And it was so popular later on in life that they reprinted it, and thousands of Irish people bought it for presents at Christmas time. So in a sense, I don't trust I suppose the way in which things will move quickly. I would like to see it move much more quickly, because every year that goes by we have children that are, I believe, disadvantaged by a system which prioritizes system over the individual. It's not personalised learning. It doesn't look after their strengths. And I think I would take my hat off to every single student this year and every year who goes through this process.
Ferdinand, how would you change it?
Well, I think Arthur has just hit on something really important. One of the reasons why it hasn't changed for 50 years, and one of the reasons why actually we're having this conversation, is not because of anything that's actually inherently within the Leaving Certificate, but rather at the end product, which is the points system. The point system, in fact, is the tail that wags this dog. So to a very major extent, everything that's happening in the Leaving Certificate, which we might be critical of, usually is happening because there is some element of the point system that's making it go that way. Arthur's point is absolutely right. The point system is a market. So it's based on supply and demand. So you find that a student coming in, say, to do computer science in DCU might, and I've been out of the system a little bit, so I don't know what the points are now, but let's say it's just over 300 points. Whereas somebody else wanting to do, say, law, and I'm a lawyer, in Trinity is going to be at 500 and above. Now, nobody in their right mind can tell me that it is easier to do computer science than it is to do law. And the only reason for this major discrepancy in points between the two subjects is because of the demand for one and the relative lack of demand for another. Mm-hmm. And because that's how the system has worked, the points are often the result of actually social ambition. So you'll find that there are certain professions, and law is actually one of them, medicine is another, because their parents want their children to go into these professions, they become very popular, the points go up, and that has nothing to do with the intellectual attainment needed for those subjects. And one other result is that people who do have high points are often pushed into these subjects for bad reasons. So you have this extraordinarily awful expression in Ireland, wasting your points, which is where people who have high points think they now have some sort of social obligation to go into a subject that requires those points, and often do not have the talent for that. Mm-hmm. So I was sitting next to a young woman recently who was a medical student in Ireland, And she admitted to me she was only a medical student because of her points. She had no actual interest in medicine. That's a terrible system to have it. Yeah, and it means that people are doing the wrong thing. They're doing it for the wrong reason. And we have a distorted system as a result. And that is the responsibility of the universities.
Well, exactly.
They
I was
run
going to
system.
Make that point. Tony, you wanted in there.
Yeah, because I think it's an important point to make how we've got this, what is, after all, a very middle class, very academic model, which defines education success in terms of this CAO conveyor belt. And what it also does squeeze out, because this is the common aspiration, is other forms of learning. We have a very fragmented and underdeveloped further education and training system. We've got an apprenticeship system which is totally not fit for purpose. I mean, I was involved with the apprenticeship review group. We prepared a report for government at the beginning of this year, which basically showed the opportunities for this earn and learn model. Young people learn in different ways and also at different stages. And as I think we've all agreed, the Leaving Cert only just measures one type of learning. So the unfortunate thing, it squeezes out the other forms. It squeezes out apprenticeships. It squeezes out further education, which, to be quite honest, is a very suitable course of study for certain groups of people. And it does not enjoy the parity of esteem that the traditional Leaving Cert has. And I think that is a tragedy. And it's a tragedy in terms of industrial policy as well, because there's a whole layer of intermediate skills which we are not preparing for. And people going into college, because they see it as a thing to do, are missing out in genuine employment opportunities as well, because they've been forced into, or they've been persuaded into, inappropriate college choices by this point system.
Anya, would you retain a point system to get into third level?
Yes, but what has happened in recent years has really not just distorted it from the point of view that we've been talking about now in relation to how students use it. I mean, the idea initially was a good idea. There were a relatively small number of courses, less than 100 courses in all of the universities. This was when the point system was set up first. It was a question then of having some kind of a system so that the young people who were, of course, there were much fewer young people doing the Leaving Cert at that time. And so during, I mean, if you go back to those early days, it was a student using the point system correctly, where they, or the CAO system correctly, where they put down what they really wanted to do in order. That's what the whole idea of the point system was initially, so that they would get their choice if they had the points for it. But of course, with what has since happened, we now have 1,500 separate programmes, many of them fragmented into very highly specialised courses, which students really don't know what they're putting down in many cases. We then have, as I say, the Leaving Certificate then, because once that became fragmented, it was decided that we'd better have more grading in the Leaving Cert. So now we have 13 separate grades in the Leaving Cert, twice and three times more than any other country in the world. That's another issue that has, again, this tiny little breaking everything down into very, very, into really fragmenting them.
And there's a proposal for that to change as well, to go back to the original A, B, C, D.
Well, not quite the original, but very similar, to go back to an 8-grade system where there would be, if you get 90, the 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s, much closer to what happens internationally. So there are a number of proposals now in the air, including reducing this ludicrous number of fragmented, highly specialised programmes for 17-year-olds filling in their CAO form in December, January, prior to the year of admission. They are not in a position to make those kind of detailed decisions.
Arthur, do you agree, though, that a point system, the tool that is used to get into third level, in itself is a fair system?
I absolutely agree that you have to have some system to, I suppose, to screen students going into certain courses, yeah, because certain courses require, just as Ferdinand said earlier, there's you're talking about the lawyer and the computer programmer. Different courses will have different requirements, and that's fine. But my point really is not so much the fact that there is an entry requirement. My problem is the entry requirement changes. Whereas I'd much prefer to see an entry requirement that they knew about in advance. But going back to what Tony says, if I could just remember, Tony talked there, made an excellent point, I believe, in terms of the strengths of children. Our children, from the time they're born right the way through primary education, develop certain strengths. And yet, and that in primary level actually is quite good because it's quite individualized. But as soon as it gets into second level, there's this system that they have to follow, this funnel that they go through. And I'd be much more, I suppose, in favour of a system that allowed more flexibility for students to choose their strengths at an early stage. I don't see why we have to force a 16-year-old to learn French irregular verbs when at that point in his life he's probably not going to be a linguist. Now, when he's 22 years of age and he meets a French girlfriend, I'm sure he'll learn French very, very well because he'll be motivated to do so. But at that point, it's not the case. Or if I had a student in first year who was brilliant in science and maths, why not give them more science and maths and less languages so they grow? The whole point about growing, the confidence of a child is to allow them to do things that they are good at and to support them in that, to pull out their strengths, rather than to try and work on their weaknesses, because we only grow a small bit in our weaknesses, we grow most in our strengths. And I finish with one last point. This, you know, I'm always amazed when you get a report card home and parents see A, D, A. What's the grade that parents spend most of the time talking about?
The D.
You know, it's what happened to D? Mm. And yet, so that all around the country, children are, I suppose, are viewed by the people who love them the most, by who they're not. Mm. So I'd be I would really like to see, and Tony's point is very, very good here in terms of trying to build strengths from children right the way through the education process, and then have an assessment on those strengths, rather than this funnel that we have to go through. Dr. Ken Robinson talks freely about the idea that creativity is as important as literacy and numeracy, mm. and I agree entirely with him.
But further than that, I mean, that sounds like an ideal education system almost. You couldn't imagine us ever putting something like that in place here. Would it be too radical, flexible?
Well, the problem is that people, as I was saying earlier, are very functional about this. They, when I sometimes talk to students and indeed to parents, and in fact, parents are much worse than students, you get the sense that they're actually completely uninterested in the whole thing unless they can work out exactly what avenue it takes them into university and beyond into profession. And therefore, any kind of pedagogy that you put to them is kind of listened to with eyes glazing over, and this really isn't what this is about. And I think this is where it has to change. And one of the ways in which we can probably help that along a bit is by changing the point system. I think that's where it has to start, because none of the rest will follow unless we do that. The point system, as Anya said, has been reviewed several times. Indeed, Anya chaired a process some years ago, 1999 or something like that, where it was reviewed. And I think the conclusion drawn at the time was that it shouldn't change. And people are...
Not quite.
Well, OK, that's the bottom line. Yes. You know, there was stuff beneath their heading. But the problem with it is predictable in it, and it's easily... Well, subject to some complexities of administration, it's relatively easily managed. My view is that that points should be used for one purpose only, which is to measure whether somebody has the intellectual capacity to do the subject they want to do. And therefore, each subject, each programme of study should have attached to it a not constantly changing point score that indicates not what the market value of that course is, which is what it currently does, but rather what the intellectual attainment has to be of somebody doing it. And so your only point condition should be that you've got to that particular point score. Now, if after that there are more applicants for a subject than there are places, and that's bound to happen, mm-hmm. Then my view is do it by lottery.
Random selection.
Yes. Random selection.
And that was, of course, an option put forward by the Points Commission, but following consultation, I mean, I personally would agree with you on that one, but the national consultation that we carried out on that was the Parents of Ireland totally rejected that.
Parents,
totally,
guidance counsellors, totally, will come after you with totally pitchforks if you suggest
exactly
that.
That's exactly what happened.
But the problem that we have faced is that nobody, and I'm absolutely not talking about you, Anya, that nobody has been courageous enough to say, well, we know this isn't working. We know that it's actually distorting not just education, but it's distorting the labour market because, for example, we have all these lawyers coming into the system that we really do not need. And so let's do something about this. But everyone shies away from that. I mean, when I was president of DCU, several times I tried to get all the other universities to, because we all had to do this together, to do something about the point system. I'm very glad to see that something is sort of happening now, that it's been talked about at any rate and it hasn't come through yet. But that is the thing. Before, unless we do that, everything else is just talk.
Tony.
Well, up to this point, we seem to have been in violent agreement on most issues. On this one, I'd actually differ with both Ferdinand and Ornia to a degree. I agree 100% about broader courses. I agree about predictability. I have to say, and it's not just as a parent, I think the idea of random selection, the infamous asterisk that appears in the newspapers when people look at their points, is if we go to lottery, it's policy failure as far as I'm concerned. And I would be quite nervous that the collapsing of the grades would lead to that. I think there's a lot of other things that need to be addressed. In practical terms, I think the first thing that needs to be addressed is the junior cycle, which is viewed as a leaving certificate for little people. It's seen as a sort of a dry run or a sort of rough guide to subject choices. I don't think you'd have the resistance amongst parents and other stakeholders to introduce reforms. I think the reforms that are proposed, where you have that sort of mixture of 60% terminal exam and 40% teacher assessment, the short courses, all the other innovations, devolving responsibility, more responsibility to schools at a school level, they're all very progressive and reforms that I think would bring a real difference into the system. The trouble is they've been delayed out to 2022 now before the whole thing will be completed. I think that's a major missed opportunity at the moment.
Anya, what do you say to that, that back to random selection is policy failure?
Well, I don't think so. I think, as Ferdinand has said there, basically the determinant for a young person whether he or she can go on to a course is, do they have the minimum requirements to enable them to be successful on that course? And that, I think, that's one of the first things the universities need to do much more carefully than the higher education institutions generally, is to set their minimum standards more realistically, because the minimum standards are so low in some cases now that we know there are up to 30, 40% of the students not managing to get through. So that, I think, in fairness to the students, where necessary, minimum requirements should be raised. But then after that, obviously, it can't be totally open-ended because there would be a complete imbalance in the demand for the programmes. And at that stage, how do you allocate? And I myself feel that lottery is as good as any, but I am also aware that it is hugely unpopular and really socially and politically not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I think we, you know, what two or three of us might think is a good thing, we have to accept it. In a democracy, it's not going to happen. It would never be voted in. That is the reality. I think, Tony, you have more supporters than we would have.
Look, we're going to take a break now, but we'll continue the discussion. I'll just read some texts before we take our break. Patrick in Dublin, this is a nice one for you, Ferdinand. I'm a graduate of DCU, and I have to say, while I felt the transition from school to college very difficult, I felt very supported in DCU, and it's a credit to all the staff and the students there. Don in Cork says, given the propensity for dishonesty in this country, any system of determining college places must remain completely anonymous, i.e. class teachers cannot have responsibility for grading their pupils. I'm not suggesting the majority of teachers are dishonest, but some, like all professionals, are. And just for the moment, Paul Doran in Clondalkin says, take the subject of maths. When young adults enter universities, the universities have to teach them the calculus vectors. The kids know so little about them. We'll continue this discussion after the break.
RTE Radio 1. Text Late Debate on 51551.
You're welcome back to the programme. We're discussing the Leaving Cert, the points race and the quality of our graduates tonight. And with me in studio, Áine Hyland, Emeritus Professor of Education and former Vice President of UCC. Arthur Godsell, Director of Godsell Education Consultants and former Principal of St Andrews College in Dublin. Tony Donoghue, Head of Education and Social Policy Innovation at IBEC. And Ferdinand von Pronczynski, Principal and Vice Chancellor of Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen, President of DCU for 10 years until 2010. Ferdinand, one other proposal that's in the mix at the moment in changing the third level entry requirements is what Áine mentioned briefly there a little while ago, that there would be fewer specialised courses on offer, more undergraduates, more courses available for students to go in and study generally in the first year and then specialise afterwards. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, it's very important actually that should be done. I mean, the process of specialisation in higher education has been one of the key features of the of this last generation or so. And that's inevitable, partly because the need of industry and of others to have very specialist type of knowledge amongst their workforce has driven that to quite an extent. However, what it means is that people have to make choices at times when they're not really equipped to make those choices.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. Would they be any more equipped at 19 to make a decision?
Well, it's not so much the age difference. It's more that what they have done in their first common year. So if you start looking at common years so that, for example, all science students do a common first year and engineers and so on as well, then you start giving people much higher level of knowledge, also a much better idea of what is involved in pedagogical terms and learning a particular subject, and a level of experience that then allows them to make a much more mature choice as to what they actually want to specialise in. And it gets us over the fact that so many people actually want to change their subjects, often can't because they've just gone too far down the road already, and then end up with what for them in temperamental terms is the wrong qualification. So I think it is a really, really important element, and I think it will help to cut dropout rates significantly if that's done. And I'm very glad to see that the university presidents in this process of reviewing the point system have, I think, already committed themselves to that particular change. And I think that's really important.
Do you think it's a good idea, Arthur?
I think it's an excellent idea because it actually mirrors an American model where you have the liberal arts colleges there. And I think, you know, it's a very, very successful operation there. Later on in the educational career of a student is a time when they actually begin to develop, and certainly in America, and I would be very much in favour of that.
Is it already happening, though, Áine, to
yes, a
large degree?
Yeah, for example, 2 years ago, University College Dublin have introduced the single point of entry for science, a very very interesting way they have done it, and with really good and clear guidelines for the students as to how different pathways will bring them to different destinations. But they all start at the same point. And I think it has already, this is its second year, it's been very successful, as I understand it. A number of other universities, of course, have never fragmented. So there are general arts degree courses in some of the universities. But that is not universally true. And unfortunately, once one university breaks the mold, if you like, and begins to fragment, it becomes, it's picked up right across the system, partly because if one university specialises and has highly fragmented courses, the points go up and they actually can cherry pick the best students. Mm. So I think it is unfortunate, and I think Ferdinand has said that. The point system belongs to the universities. It has always been a possibility for them to change it. There's never been any reason why the point system wouldn't be changed since it was introduced 40 odd years ago. But it never has been changed. And partly it's because all universities really have to agree, broadly speaking, to the same approach. Mm. And that's not easy in a competitive system.
Tony, what about going outside the point system? Because a couple of years ago, I think it was, Trinity said they were going to pilot a new way of entry for their law course, a written letter of application, an interview and teachers' references.
Yeah, and they're still actually doing that. They're running that pilot this year. I think it is definitely worth trying because, as we've agreed, that if you just have one method of assessment, you're going to have one sort of set of behaviours. And anything that gives you multiple points of assessment, whether that's school reports, whether that's learning reflection or whatever, is got to be good. Now, it probably has logistical challenges. I mean, I remember when I went to university many, many years ago, you went for an interview and that was and then you got an offer based on, this was in the UK, based on that interview. But that was at a time when 7% of people were going on to third level. We now have in this country over 60% going on to third level. So I can imagine there are challenges there. But the basic principle of sort of multiple methods of assessment definitely sound, yeah.
Ferdinand, do you agree with that pilot, or could it be open to abuse?
Well, if it is well managed, it probably wouldn't. I mean, but the problem with it is, if it were to be extended across the system as a whole, it's very labour intensive. And the resources required, by which I mean particularly people, to operate that are beyond what the system at the moment has. I'm, like everyone else, I'm really very pleased that this pilot has been attempted. I hope and I expect that it will show very good results. But on the basis of the current resourcing of the system, it's not realistic to expect that to extend across the whole system.
Anya?
Yes, I think that's basically the major issue. When I started, which was not today or yesterday, 35 years ago in third level, we had interviews for a number of courses which were not in the CAO. I coordinated interviews for teacher education at that time. We had 600 applicants for our 110 places and we interviewed every one of them, and it was an absolute logistical, I wouldn't say nightmare, but it was hugely demanding in terms of the logistics. And also, unfortunately, it's very, very difficult to ensure consistency in interviews. And indeed, even in let's say, reading personal statements or even school statements, I have experience of a number of those approaches. And if you have 20 people all assessing student personal statements, it's not easy to get consistency. Interviews are notoriously difficult to get consistency in. And, the experience in teacher education was that there wasn't a particularly high correlation between the grade at interview and subsequent performance. So, ironically, there are a number of those approaches which have been tested either nationally or internationally, and the predictability is not marvellous. The Leaving Certificate, for all its faults, is the most predictable. And there are a number of studies which have been carried out over 20, 30, 40 years at different periods, and the evidence from them is not particularly good in terms of reliability.
Do you accept that, Arthur?
Well, I also have experience with things like the International Baccalaureate Programme, which is not just an examination, it's not just an endpoint, it's a programme of 2 years. And the way that works, it has a mixture of interview and final assessment and coursework. So it's a composite programme. And interestingly enough, it asks you to take three subjects at higher level and three at ordinary level. You only take three, and you only take you take three higher level and three ordinary level, and the points for each one are identical. So it accepts the breadth of the learning, but also allows the strengths to be developed. But it also has repeats, which the Leaving Certificate doesn't have in the same year. It also has a situation so that if a child does not perform the examination for whatever reason, and this year I'm sure we'll have many students who will be ill or sick or issues happen in families where they can't perform the examination, you can go back to the guided coursework and you can go back to the teacher recommendations as well. So it's a very composite system of trying to get the best out of the students. So any system that actually helps us or helps those who are in charge of these particular decisions to get the most information should be employed. And people talk about cost and logistics. You know, when we're talking about probably our greatest resource, our young people for next year, for the next generation and so on, we should not we should not be found short in investing in this particular important aspect of life.
I'm just going to read some more text coming in from Mary. I totally agree with your speakers vis-a-vis supply and demand about the points race. It really is a case of get the points but not the true point of learning. As a primary school teacher for more than 30 years, I despair about the rat race that is the Irish secondary school system. Jerry says, would the panel agree that teachers regarded as successful within the current point system have a vested interest in resisting changes to the curriculum? Fionn Ryan is a repeat Leaving Cert student who has texted in County Leitrim. He says, I agree with the Leaving Cert ideal. A broad range of subjects is helpful to teach students what they like and don't like. There are, however, aspects I disagree with. I went to Yates College, which is a repeat school, and the exam became about points and not about learning. This attitude spoils the minds of students and gives them the wrong impression with regard to what learning is all about. Derry Ann Morgan, I'm 60 years old. I went to a private fee-paying school and still to this day I'm suffering from having undiagnosed dyslexia. I'm far from thick, but I learn different than the Irish education system allows for. I am one of approximately 5% who are not catered for even in today's education system. I was only diagnosed about 15 years ago. Arthur is talking great sense, and for the record, educo or educate means to draw out. So thank you for those. Well, we've done our Leaving Cert, we're into university and now we're coming out the other end, and we're going to talk for the rest of the programme about the quality of the graduates that are coming out. And let's hear the thoughts of our regular contributor, author and comedian Colm O'Regan, who's been thinking back to his own time doing the Leaving Cert and at university.
I'm a little conflicted in doing this column. Just by writing it, I'm a cog in the giant Leaving Cert media machine that cranks into action every early summer. There's a huge peak around English Paper 2 when some poet has the audacity not to turn up on the exam. Another spike if one of the triangles in the maths exam adds up to 194 degrees. And further headlines if the same triangle turns up accidentally in the Irish listening comprehension. But in some ways, the day of English Paper 1 is a perfect time to write an essay that no one's going to take any notice of, so here goes. I'm ambivalent about the Leaving Cert, the point system and university. I liked exams, the ordering of information, the way a deadline creates a sense of flow that eliminates procrastination and faffing about, the pattern of exam papers, the group experience, the feeling of being centre of the nation's attention for a couple of times in life. Yet I know that it doesn't always prepare you for the next stage. As a bookish, exam-y person, I found it hard to deal with feeling quite stupid at work for a long time. But so what? Life is about dealing with things that you don't know, being out of your depth, being sent out to fetch the glass hammer. I did civil engineering in college, worked as an IT consultant, and now I'm a, well, I don't know what I am, professional spoofer maybe. I've been out of my depth for the last 14 years. But the business world is telling us that the education system is not producing the right sort of graduates and must change. If it must, could we keep in mind a couple of caveats? Number one, adults who are incumbents in the workplace will always think that new arrivals are mewling brats whose confidence outweighs their talent, who need a reminder that back in the day you had to walk to school with shoes stuffed with the evening press to keep warm. And secondly, industry wants the education system to change, but be careful of what industry wants. Companies come and go, they change what they make, they are interested strongly in making a profit. We should by all means listen to their advice, but they are not the only truth. What do we need as a society? Here's one suggestion for the education system. I'll use a buzzword, outcomes. If you want the education system to prepare our students for the real world, why not come up with a checklist of about 100 basic life skills that would be useful for any adult to have, no matter what the industry. Start with making sure that everyone, and I mean everyone, has reading, writing and mental arithmetic skills, and move on to other things, such as how to research, how to write an email looking for help from someone you haven't met, how to change the toner on a printer, how to deal with negative feedback, how to change a plug, how to tie a knot, how to conserve water, how to grow potatoes, how to cook cheaply and healthily, how to do CPR, how to treat people of the opposite sex, how to treat minorities, how to vote, how to plan a family, how to tell the difference between a friend and a drug dealer, how to tell a client about a delay, how to drive a car not like a lunatic, and how to look after your mental health. The rest, as they say, they can learn on the job.
And that was Colm O'Regan there. Tony O'Donoghue, back to you on this one. You're representing IBEC here tonight. Is the education system producing the right sort of worker?
Well, I've learned not to make a sweeping generalisation about the quality of graduates because, I mean, you can't. When we ask our members, 75% of them in the last survey said they were confident of having people with the requisite skills in the next 5 years. Is that good? I'd be concerned that 25% aren't confident, and I'm not sure how meaningful some of these figures tend to be. I actually agree with a lot of Colm's input there, because it is around developing minds for the future. It's okay, IBEC will point out where there are particular skill gaps, and ICT is one that has recurred. We're still sourcing, and we've improved mightily in this regard. We're still sourcing about 35% of our ICT skills abroad. We're not alone in that sense. This is a global shortage, and for the foreseeable future, I think a lot of the jobs will be technology based. But there are other attributes, and I think there is a kind of a phony debate that goes on about whether we're educating people for a society or for an economy. It might have been true 50 years ago when business was looking for something else. Now business is looking for cultivation of the intellect, to use Cardinal Newman's phraseology. It's around developing minds for the future, you know, and we've already heard about, Arthur was mentioned, the creative mind, a huge premium on that. The disciplined mind, yes, but also the synthesizing mind that brings together different pieces of information from different disciplines, the respectful mind, the ethical mind. These are the things that business are interested in, well-rounded, cultured citizens, ethical citizens.
And how are we doing on that front then?
I think we're improving, but a lot of our previous by the time the third level have managed to deprogram what's come through the doors, and they are also, if they were to be honest with themselves, they also have some of that vestiges of the examinations, etc. I think we mentioned investment, over the last 6 years now, there's been significant cutbacks at third level. Mm-hmm. We've seen a 20% reduction in supports for students, spending per student. That has got to have an impact on quality. And the type of attributes that I'm talking about developing do demand resources. And this should be seen, to use a horrible business term, but an investment in our future human capital. This is productive investment. This is our future, as Arthur said. So we should be looking seriously at that, both in terms of public expenditure and how sustainable the current model is. And I think that whole debate around fees, etc., has to be resurrected again.
Arthur.
Yeah, I mean, just what Tony is saying, I couldn't agree with him more. I mean, just figures from 2010, 9.4% of all public spending was devoted to education, compared with 13% the rest of the developed world in Ireland, in terms of the reduction in terms of the actual spend. So investment is very important. But also, I mean, I think somebody once said that the top 10 jobs in the world today weren't there 10 years ago. And that the children that are entering school at 4 years of age this September will retire in 2075. I have no idea what job they'll retire from. But what we do need to do is we need to be able to empower them with the type of skills that Tony is talking about. I think we're all talking about, actually. That's why the education system from primary, secondary and into third level should be one continuous stream of continuous learning, rather than these disparate groups that have different options and outcomes.
Ferdinand, what's your view on the quality of the graduate?
Well, I think there are a number of different things wrapped up in that question. One of them is the one that Tony was referring to, which is just what type of graduates do we need for what type of jobs? And it's a relatively technical one, but it does raise all the issues we were raising earlier about how people choose particular programmes of study and so on. but it could be solved. The other one is more about what kind of what we earlier called soft skills, transferable skills, people should come through the whole education system with. And when I was president of DCU, I once got a letter from an irate employer who was telling me, actually wrongly, because it turns out the person he was talking about wasn't a DCU graduate, but he was telling me that this person couldn't spell, couldn't write, couldn't add up anything, but was telling me all of this in a letter that was so grammatically incorrect, which I have to say I couldn't resist telling him, that you started wondering about what kind of assessment was involved in this. But I think obviously there are basic skills that everybody should have, and that feeds into the qualification issue. But we also need to know why we're educating people, what we expect young people or not so young people, because it's a lifelong learning era we're in, to what kind of things do we want them to get out of this, and what do we want them to be able to do in society as a result of what they've done. So it shouldn't just be geared towards professions, although how we distribute students among different subjects of study is relevant to that, but how we teach them should not just be to please employers. We should aim to do what is right so we create creative, responsible citizens.
What do you think, Anya?
Yeah, I couldn't say it better than Tony and Ferdinand have said it there. I completely agree. But I think what we do have to be careful about are the anecdotal comments we hear about falling standards. There's little or no evidence to support that. And in fact, Tony has mentioned the survey. I was going to mention the survey of employers. And in that survey, which was carried out by the Higher Education Authority 2 years ago, 402 separate employers were surveyed. The vast majority of them were very satisfied or satisfied with the skills of their recent employees. Graduates recruited in the past 2 years, I'm just looking at the figures, in no area at all were they dissatisfied or very dissatisfied in more than 5% of the cases. So we're talking about a very, very small proportion of graduates going into employment who are not coming up to the standards under a whole range of headings, including literacy, numeracy, ability to work in teams, ability concern for quality and detail, entrepreneurial skills. Entrepreneurial skills were relatively weaker than any other area. But by and large, the satisfaction both nationally and internationally with Irish graduates is very high. And it would be ironic if we shot ourselves in the foot by telling the world that that's not the way it is, because in fact, there is no evidence to support the other. And there's just one other point I think that is important to make tonight in relation to the young people who are concerned about the leaving certificate and how they will perform in the next few weeks. In the coming September, 25% of the places in all of our higher education institutions will be allocated to non-school leavers. That's a very big change from 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. So there are more and more, proportionately, more and more mature students, more and more students coming through the FETAC route, through further education, coming in under special quotas for students from disadvantaged backgrounds and so on. So I think that is an important point, that if you don't make it the first time round, there are thousands of students coming in to our higher education institutions
through
other routes. Yeah.
Tony.
Sorry,
Arthur, go ahead.
Also, just come back to what Anya's saying there is, I just picked up a few statistics here that I'm sure you all know about, but Walt Disney was fired from the Kansas City newspaper for not being creative enough, you know. Richard Branson left school at 16, so did Elton John. Alexander Graham Bell had specific learning difficulties and very poor grades. So what you're saying is actually and I think that note of positivity that Anya's mentioned there as we close this programme down is very, very important for all those students out there, that there is a way forward, that they will be successful and they'll do very, very well.
And Tony, I suppose, you know, we all want to hope that we're not going to be educating for emigrating.
Absolutely. And I think we can take some comfort even in today's Exchequer return figures in that regard. We are seeing a recovery starting to take hold. And that's why these decisions are so important, because as employers start looking at recruiting again, it becomes a battle for talent. And that's a global battle. They're competing with other plants across the world, or if they're indigenous companies, they're trying to sell abroad. So I don't think we are. I think we are seeing a recovery starting to take hold. I was just struck, actually, Arthur and Anya's comments, though, about, I suppose, giving solace to the people who are doing the leaving certificate. I don't think too many of them will be listening at this moment. But it struck me, and something that probably does require emphasizing. Studying, okay, requires discipline, but it also should be enjoyable. Mm. And the young people who are preparing for Macbeth tomorrow, I don't think enjoyment's actually on their radar, and which is a great pity,
Well, look, thank you all very much indeed. I'll leave with just one text from Mary. At a prize-giving ceremony in UCD, I witnessed parents commenting on the actual amount of points received by various students. Just imagine remembering all of the points received by the children living in your area or attending your child's school. How sad is that? Thank you all very much indeed. Tony O'Donoghue, Anya Hyland, Arthur Godsell and Ferdinand von Pronczynski. We're back at 10 o'clock tomorrow night. Yeah, tomorrow night's Thursday. We'll see you then. Till then, from all of us, good night.
The Late Debate with Audrey Carville was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. The researcher was Richie Byrne. And Damien Chanels was on sound.